You're listening to Grace and Fire, brought to you by Emerging Women.
Today, my guest is Vicki Saunders. Vicki is a serial entrepreneur, passionate mentor, and advisor to the next generation of changemakers, and a leading advocate for entrepreneurship as a way of creating positive transformation in the world. Vicki is a founder of SHEEO, which supports women who leverage their talents, strengths, and passion to create businesses that build new models, new mindsets, and new solutions for a better world. She is also the author of the new book, Think Like a SHEEO, Succeeding in the Age of Creators, Makers, and Entrepreneurs, where she shows readers how to leverage their talents, strengths, and genuine interests to create businesses that make them happy and successful. With Emerging Women, Vicki Saunders will be a featured presenter at the 2015 Emerging Women Live event in San Francisco, California. In today's episode, Vicki and I spoke about the current landscape for women entrepreneurs, her notion that it doesn't have to be hard, and focusing on your strengths. Meaning is the new money, the rise of making a difference as more important than making money. Actually having what you want and creating your own reality. Crossing what she calls the fear threshold. And finally, her big vision for women entrepreneurs. Here is my conversation, Think Like a SHEEO, with the original SHEEO, Vicki Saunders. Hello, Vicki. Welcome. Welcome to Grace and Fire.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
So excited to dig in. I was looking and preparing, you know, from your blogs and your book here, Think Like a SHEEO. And I felt like I wanted to go over, I see you have 8 principles in here. And I felt like, okay, we need to talk about this and we need to talk about this. So I just picked out like my favorites. That I want to hit on. But I thought first what we should do is just hear a little bit about your background so that we can have context when we go into the meat of the book to like what your experience has been as a business, as a business leader, and how the landscape, if you could weave your personal bio, but also how the landscape has changed in the last 15 years or so since you've been rocking it in the business world.
Sure. Well, thank you. So things for me, I never thought I'd be an entrepreneur, actually. So I'll just start right there. But now I can't imagine my life as anything but an entrepreneur. I think I'm completely unemployable by anyone. I just absolutely love running, you know, coming up with ideas and taking them to market. But what really changed for me, and I sort of grew up as a young person, really looking for a place where I could have the biggest impact and make money. And, you know, 30 years ago, this was considered ridiculous. It's like you made money on this side and you did good on the other side. It was very black and white and separate. But I was one of the sort of, I guess, early pioneers around how can you do good and make money at the same time. And I really didn't see a lot of models out there for that. So I just started. And my start came when right after the wall fell down in Berlin, I found myself in Europe trying to decide what I was going to do with my life. And I got on a train and immediately went over to Prague, which I fell in love with. And I became an entrepreneur there. I kind of looked around and every single person was dreaming about what they were going to do now that they were free. And this is like, this really speaks to the mindset of SHEEO. Like I grew up in a place where you're supposed to already be free in Canada. And I didn't really feel free. Like by the time I hit my mid-20s, there were all these layers of expectations of the kinds of schools to go to, the jobs that were right for me, the peers in my network that would allow me to be a certain way. And in Prague, I got a chance to just slough all of that off and reinvent myself. And because everyone else was dreaming about what they were going to do now that they were free, I did the same thing. I'm like, oh my God, I'm free too. What do I want to do? And I just started experimenting. I looked around, I looked at what the market needed. I started my first business, then I started another business, then I got all my friends to start businesses. And I became a real catalyst for entrepreneurship. And this is something I've really been thinking about my whole life, is how do you create an environment for people to believe that they're free and they can do more than they think they can? And I think at this particular point in time in the world, when I look at it, it feels like everything's broken. And for me, that's a great time to be alive. Everything's broken. What a great time to be alive. If you're a creator, maker, entrepreneur, this is kind of your nirvana. Because if you look out on the street, when I look out on the street anyway, I like almost everything to me needs to be redesigned, reinvented, redefined. And I really think it's important that women are at the table for that redefinition, because I think we can do better in creating a better world. And I think that women are really critical to be part of that redesign.
And, you know, again, once again, for the background on you, you have quite an impressive business background. You took one of your companies public, or was that a company you also founded? Yeah.
Yep.
And then you sold
yep.
a few of them. So you actually have a lot of gritty, on the street, you know, sleeves rolled up experience here. It's not just,
yeah.
you know, sometimes when we talk to serial entrepreneurs, quote unquote, they don't really reach a scale, or they're onto the next business before the one that they've created has reached a significant scale. So I just wanted to really make that point, because it adds context to your viewpoint.
Yeah, I think I've had, you know, I've bootstrapped a company, I've raised angel investing and then taking a company public. I've done kind of every different approach you can take to business. And so I've been through a lot of the different models. I've had grants and debt and equity, like every kind of financing. So I feel like, having been through that experience, to your point, I have a real sense of what's not working, particularly for women in the marketplace.
So let's go there. You know, the first chapter of your book is Everything It's Broken, It's a Great Time to Be Alive. And you just talked a little bit about that. But what is the landscape for women entrepreneurs right now? And what are the opportunities and what are the challenges that we're facing?
Well, I think there are many, many opportunities. Really, like, keep hearing the word disruption all over the place. Everything's being disrupted. Software is eating the world, says Marc Andreessen. And I think that, you know, humanity is suffering. Less, you know, 1% of the population, 0.1% of the population owns 90% of the wealth. You know, I think it's, I can't remember, the number's probably changed since I last saw the stat, but it was 85 people have the same wealth as the bottom 3.5 billion. But that's not the kind of world I want to live in. And I think there are lots of other people who would like to live in a different world. The wealth inequality is a big problem, but most governments have 70% of their budget is taken up by healthcare and education, and it's projected to be 100% of the budget. So, like, we have to really redefine so many things in society. And I think there's a huge opportunity from a business perspective to get in there and mess things around and try new models. I think we really made all this stuff up years and years ago, and the world's changed dramatically. We're going to be 9 billion people soon. I think there's just a huge chance to innovate around that. I think some of the challenges that have existed for women in the world, obviously we have families, we have kids, we're a primary caretaker in many cases. And so we haven't tended to build really big businesses. We've built businesses that allow us to balance all the other aspects of our lives. But the dominant mantra out there for success for entrepreneurs is you have to work 24/7 and you have to build something big or it doesn't matter. And I'd like to call BS on that, because I think that there are all kinds of different ways to run businesses. It's not just about big and maximizing profits and scaling everything. And when I look at the world, I think, you know, so show me where scale has really made a big difference, a positive difference in the world. I see a lot of things that have scaled that are actually now falling down to the ground and getting redesigned from the bottom up. So I'm not against building big businesses. I've done that myself. But I also think that women, majority of women, build businesses that they can balance their life around. And I think that we need to redefine what success is. It's not just big, huge stuff. It's stuff that makes your life happy and livable and, you know, minimum stress. I think we're all pretty stressed out by the kinds of rules that we've sort of created, and I'm doing quote unquote around the rules, for what success means.
Okay, so here's my own personal experience. I'm building a business. I'm getting close to, you know, my second year anniversary with Emerging Women. And it's been intense as a mom too, right? You know, kids. And of course, I do have a nanny. I couldn't do this without help at home. But I'm curious, like, it's been, you know, hard. It's interesting, like, that's another one of your principles here is it doesn't have to be hard. What makes it not hard in my experience is that it's so joyful and on purpose, and I feel like I'm really making a difference, but it is intense. And I'm wondering if you could flush out this, it doesn't have to be hard, because I'm wondering if I can learn something here that can actually ease up on some of the stress.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think there's this, I don't mean to be light about it. Like, oh, it's just, everything's really easy and just be in flow and, you know, it's no problem. It's tough. You know, the path that we've each chosen, is there and sets challenges in front of us. And it can be difficult, but what I've found over the course of my lifetime is the more and more I focus on what I am masterful at and what I can do effortlessly, it creates more success for me. So if I'm trying to be something that I'm not, which is a lot of those outside voices that come in for me, I get in trouble. If I go, I'm amazing at this and I suck at details, so I'm going to make sure I have an awesome ops person beside me. If I think I can do it all and I have to do it all because the role of a CEO is supposed to be that I take care of all these things, then it's disaster for me. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, we've set up a lot of these, you know, this is what a CEO is, this is what a COO is, these are what all these different roles are. And I don't actually think that people are made up that way. Like, it's a false construct. Mm-hmm. So I think trying to get really clear on what you are amazing at and what energizes you during the day and focusing on that, and then adding the other stuff around, the other people on your team, the stuff that gives you the full experience is important. And I know that at early stages getting started, people have limited resources, but part of the thing that's really important as an entrepreneur is building followership and an ability to lead charismatically that people want to come on board and help.
Tell us a little bit more about that, because I'm actually also seeing this with executives, not just entrepreneurs. This idea of followship and fellowship, so to speak. Tell me more.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, entrepreneur, I think we can use these words, like really a person who wants to go out and achieve great things in the world and lead. So for what I find, so let's just talk about one thing that happens in companies, which is kind of makes me crazy, performance evaluations and the way that we do them. Oftentimes in a performance evaluation, someone will say, Chantal, you are so amazing at these three things. Keep doing it. These other four things, you're terrible at. So could you just spend some time working on them? And in my company, when I had a number of employees just before we went public, I was like, oh my God, Richard, you are terrible at these three things. Please don't ever touch them again. Like, I don't want people in my company working on stuff that they're crappy at. Why would I want that?
Right.
So this is some kind of crazy thing that we tend to do because of the role and the definition of what the marketing person is supposed to be doing. We then push someone who's not great at some elements of that job to just work harder when they're not great at it. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, like I just find like it is effortless for me to make connections all day long and to connect ideas and people together. Some people are like, how do you do that? And for me, it energizes me. Mm-hmm. So I have to put myself in a position where that is like the main part of my value add. Mm-hmm. And if it's about, you know, like this morning, I spent a couple hours doing Eventbrite and MailChimp and integrating these things together for events. I'm like, oh my God, why am I doing this again? I've learned this lesson. This is not my mastery. And so I think it's paying attention to that and just really, it's incredibly important to notice what energizes you and what takes energy away and try and design your life around the things that energize you and then fill in the stuff that doesn't with people that it does energize. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also your point of the followership of leading in a way where people can hook into you a little bit and that networking, I don't think you need to be like a crazy networker to cultivate a following, meaning a group of supporters who believe in what you're doing.
Absolutely. And I meet entrepreneurs all the time who have these ideas and they'll come along and say, you know, it's not getting traction. I'm like, well, how many people are following you? Who's interested in what you're doing? And they're not focused on that. They're just trying to push their idea out there without seeing if it resonates. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the big messages of entrepreneurship is timing is everything. Oh my goodness. So it may be a problem that needs to be solved in the world, but maybe it's not right now. So one of my favorite questions for entrepreneurs is why you and why now? And if you can answer those two questions unequivocally, then you're rocking. And if you can't answer those two questions, you need to think a little bit more deeply about whether or not this is really the idea that you're meant to put out in the world or if this is the timing. And sometimes it's just a tough slog. Like I tend to have been ahead of the market on many of my ventures. Mm-hmm. And that's difficult because, you know, years ago, like 15 years ago, I was creating experiential based education kind of stuff. And kids were working on real projects while they were in school. And parents were like, you know, this is exploiting kids because they're working on real projects. I'm like, oh my God, really? You'd rather have them, you know, working at McDonald's? Now everybody wants that, like real projects in the classroom so you can build a resume and a report card. But back then it was really, we were still in the black and white zone of like you do projects for school and you do work stuff separately. So I think, you know, timing is mm-hmm. is critical to all of this.
Yeah. So another thing that you just alluded to is one of your principles that I love and speaks to authentic leadership. And it's number three, you can't be somebody else and lead. And I think that when you ask that question, why now, which I think entrepreneurs are more likely, I can definitely answer that question, but why me? Now, that's one I think for women in particular, we tend to kind of downplay ourselves and, you know, be more deferential to others than, you know, express our own value easily. Can you talk more about that?
So I think something kind of interesting happens in the nurturing of males versus females in our society. And one of the things is that girls regularly get positive feedback for being perfect and for being good. And guys are often encouraged or it's okay for them to be bad and to work harder for things. And so one of the things that happens from an early age is we get used to not really putting our ideas out there until they're perfect because we're looking for that feedback of, you know, good girl. And I know some people might not agree with this, but I've seen over and over incredibly talented people who don't quite think they're ready yet or wouldn't stand up in front of an audience and saying, I'm going to disrupt this. We stand up and say, this is doable and I will achieve it. But what is recognized and supported and financed out there are crazy big ass ideas that are, I mean, really, when I look, I've sat through so many pitches in my life. I've been a VC, I've funded these ideas. I'm an entrepreneur in residence. And I sit there and I'm like, really, this person is completely full of it, right? I know that it's not going to happen the way that they want it. But what happens with an investor sitting there going, they want to get behind someone who maybe can make that happen. And if you're not shooting for something that's going to be that big, you're never going to hit it. So if you're shooting for something where I think I can make this happen, okay, you're going to have pretty good growth, but it's not going to be that rocket ship, that unicorn kind of company that everybody wants. Mm-hmm. And women generally don't walk up on stage and say, I'm going to disrupt the universe. Mm-hmm. And the flip side of that, and so my answer isn't just go do that, because I've seen lots of situations where women get up and do that and it doesn't get recognized. Mm-hmm. You know, someone will say, well, why, who does she think she is? So I don't think that we get treated the same way in the marketplace. And this is a bit of a challenge.
Okay, so the next thing I want to hone in on is another one of your principles. I think we're going to end up going through the book. But anyway, I can't help it. They're all such good topics. So meaning is the new money. This is very exciting. Talk to us about that.
So this one, a friend of mine said this to me years ago, and I loved it because it really, you know, the vast majority of millennials and lots of other people now really want to have meaning. But meaning matters to them more than money. Making a difference matters more than what the salary is. And ideally, we match the two together and you have a meaningful, you know, well-paying job, or you have a meaningful, awesome, growing startup. It's not enough anymore to just provide a good product. You have to have a good product that's sustainable, that adds value to the community that it was developed in, that makes you feel better and delights you, right? Like there are 9 billion people on the planet. How do you stand out above the crowd with your product? And there's so many, like we went from the 20th century, which was dozens of markets with millions of customers, to this new world where we have millions of markets with dozens of customers, the long tail. And so to make yourself stand out, you really have to like get into the heartstrings, the emotional connection, the meaning of people, so that they become rabidly excited about your product because they have so many other choices out there. And so that happens from business and a product level right down to an individual, right? Like when I sort of look at all of these people that are just going, I don't want to go to Wall Street anymore when I graduate. I want to go do something that makes a difference in the world, because look at the state of the world. Like, what is the highest form of leadership and the biggest impact that you can have? People are asking these questions now as opposed to just pursuing money, because we've got so many studies now showing that it doesn't really lead to happiness. And what really people really want is a sense of that personal advocacy that they have in the world.
So not only, you know, providing passion for entrepreneurs, but also you're basically saying that I think there's a book out there called The Creative Class, or where they talk about this being 40% of our population and growing, where actually people are, whether they're executives or entrepreneurs, really looking for meaning and connection to social purpose in the world or some kind of impact.
Absolutely. And I mean, we're seeing that right out into the investor crowd, where the new term du jour is impact investing, and people wanting to have a financial impact as well as a social or an environmental impact. So I think that, you know, all bets are off on the black and white world we've been living in. We are really moving into a much more integrated perspective, really, where people are looking at, you know, how does this make me feel when I use this product? How does this make me feel when I work at this company? As well as, what is this company doing? Is it doing good things in the world? And what are we putting out there in the world? And is that the best thing that I can do with my life? Mm-hmm. You know, I have this story that I talk about in the book from a young person who is a total rock star and had been going to Harvard and was recruited to go to this investment bank day. And they pulled out one of their top shooters, who was in his 30s and had, you know, made 10 or $40 million a year before, whatever the numbers are, all kind of crazy. And he stood up and he said, "I've made all this money last year and I'm so awesome." And this person put up their hand and said, "Given the state of the world and all the challenges we're facing, is this really the highest form of leadership that you, this is really what you want to do with your life? Just make money." And I mean, that would never have been asked 20 years ago, right? But this is what these young ones are asking now. It's like, what is with this? Why are we all pursuing the mighty dollar? It's not getting us where we need to go.
Right. Okay. So now we have purpose. We're going to make a difference in the world. And then as an entrepreneur, we run into fear. And fear of risk. And you have, one of your chapters is all about mindset. And you actually make the statement that you can have what you want. And that's a strong statement. And is that true? For real?
Of course.
For reals? For real? I mean, that's a strong statement. Yeah. So tell me more about that and how, you know, I want to actually hear that. You have a technique called flipping it, which I think would be great to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, flipping it lives in my head all day long. So first of all, if you believe that you can have what you want, then you can have what you want. If you don't think that's possible, then of course you create that reality. And so one of the things that I have been working on for years and years and years, and I'm constantly trying to reframe things for myself, is listening to my language and when I have limiting words that come out. So for example, I'll hear myself going, "It would be really hard to do that." And then I quickly notice that and go, "Well, what if it wasn't? And what if, you know, what if I could do it faster? What if I could do it in a different way? What if I could make it a game? What if it could be fun?" And I'm constantly flipping that, because really, I mean, we're only limited by our imaginations. Mm. And so constantly checking in on yourself when you say those things, because your words create your reality. So if you're walking around going, "I can't do this unless I raise $1 million, then, you know, you're limiting yourself. Well, what if there was a way to do it differently? What if there was a new approach? And the flipping it piece for me is what's constantly keeping me fresh, because I think I'm just getting started in terms of my potential. And I have no idea what my full potential is, but I'm constantly thinking, okay, so I've solved this barrier. Now what's my new thing that I'm working on? And how can I kind of trick myself out of my old way of thinking from my experience into a new approach? How can I feel like I could create a different reality than what I've had before? And I think, you know, the thing with a growth mindset and a fixed mindset is, in a fixed mindset, you sort of take all your experiences, you load them all up and you go, "This is the way it is." And, you know, I have a friend who is a designer, and she thinks that every contractor is out there to rip her off. And that happens to every single time she does a project, she has a problem with a contractor. And I go, "Hey, contractors are awesome. We've worked with contractors who don't even do budgets, and everything works out fine." And I think, you know, part of it is, when you walk in with a thought that it's going to be a certain way, you create that reality. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't want that to be true, be careful about what you're thinking. And I think this is really important in every part of your business. Like, if it's going to be really hard to raise money, then you have that in your head all the time. This is really hard, and you create the situation for it to be hard. But you can't just say it's going to be really easy and also feel like it's going to be really hard. You know, so the challenge is you have to kind of get yourself into believing it. Yeah.
So let's use that as an example. I've got to raise $1 million, you know, in order to make this company fly. And that may be true, but how would you, if you walk in with this is going to be hard, give me an example on how you would flip that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, part of the thing would be, okay, well, let's think about how you're approaching this. How are you going to, why is it hard? Why do you think it's going to be hard? Is it because other people have told you that or because you believe it? Or like literally write down, why is it going to be hard in your mind? And then think, you know, literally on one column and then flip to the other column and it's not hard or it's easy or whatever the word is, or it's frictionless. Mm-hmm. And how can you flip each of those things that you believe as part of the statement? Like unpack what that hardness is. Mm-hmm. And then one, is there another way that you could approach it? Is there someone who is delighted by the things that scare the crap out of you in your network? Is there somebody who could help you with those places where you really think there's only one way to do it? And maybe there's three, mm-hmm. you know, but I think unpacking it instead of just staying at the top level, oh, it's hard to raise money. Okay, fine. Great. But what does that really mean?
Or conversely, staying at the top level, oh, it's easy to raise money, because that's kind of a trigger for me, this whole manifesting and the secret.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of unpacking it. And it also unpacks the possibility, which I think, especially as women, I find that we put a ceiling on that because it's, you know, it just feels like too audacious, or at least that's my experience for myself. And I like that word unpacking. If we can unpack it as we flip it, then it doesn't, you know, just become the opposite.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now talk to me about risk and fear. And you have a term that I love, crossing the fear threshold. And what do you mean by that? And how does one do that?
Yeah. So this is a really interesting one. So, you know, an example for me is I was petrified of, it's taken me forever to build my confidence. And when people look at me and see me being now, they're really surprised when I say that. But I really have spent years and years to try and build myself up. And I would never put my hand up in classroom for fear that my answer was wrong or I was stupid. And when I realized for the work that I wanted to do in the world that I needed to get out there, I had to speak in public. And I was super worried about that and really nervous about it. So I told everybody that I knew that I was petrified of speaking, but I needed to get speaking engagements. So please help me get speaking engagements. Like I just had to go for it. Mm-hmm. And so as Sherry Huber, one of my favorite Zen teachers says, if you're afraid of falling, dive, mm-hmm. which is kind of classic, right? So go right into it. So I basically put out the word that I wanted speaking engagements. I got a speaking engagement like a month later in front of 1500 people. And my legs were shaking when I was up on stage. But I knew that I couldn't have the impact I wanted to have in the world unless I went with it. And so whenever I'm afraid of something, I actually ask for help from everyone in my network to help me like get whatever that experience is. Like I was actually afraid of doing a TED talk because I don't like to broadcast and memorize things, and you have to memorize because that's your format. And so I, you know, put out there, please, you know, help me find a way to talk at TED, and I got it and I have broken through that. So every one of these, so I think it's really important to be, you know, clear on your fear, got it, you know, things are scary. You had a person at your Emerging Women event. Who was she, that awesome speaker who is absolutely petrified of speaking on stage?
Woki Nwamwaze. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that was incredible just to see the process and the hearing from other people, the struggle that they go through. But for me, this is like walking right through and mm-hmm. into it. And I don't ever do that alone. I always do that with other people. I get people to help me with that.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. I've experienced the same thing. I'm just recently, because I think, you know, this is another thing, is we don't want to admit some of our fears. And so that's like pretty much step one. And then, you know, once you're there, people just step up. I just find like, if you just say what your fear is, it feels like the women in my network anyhow have just stepped forward and said, how can I help? It's just so wonderful.
Well, there's something so special about like just putting your vulnerability on the table.
Yeah.
Because other people can relate to it. And then they're like, you know, you're going to have an army of people around you supporting you. I think the other part of this too is to, you know, because I hear people say, no, but I really want it to happen and it's not happening. And part of the thing for me is, how much do you really want it? My friend Gina says this all the time, and I think it's a pretty powerful question. You know, when something's not happening that I say that I want, mm-hmm. I kind of sit back and think, how much do I really want this? Like, mm-hmm. if I really want it, you know, what's going on here? How am I blocking myself mm-hmm. from achieving this?
Right. So we talked about fear. Let's talk a little bit more about risk, because I think that especially for entrepreneurs, and there's, you know, also people in the corporate world about to take risks or weighing options. Maybe they're leaving and starting a company. And I get asked this question a lot, like, you know, the risk of leaving a salaried position and starting a company when your whole family is built around, you know, a certain income level. And we don't have to get into the details of that, but how do you handle, there's a slew of other risks that go into it, you know, the risk of scaling, the risk of reaching too big. And what's the mindset around risk? And are there some practical, like, you know, some practices around that that can mm-hmm. help us get through it?
Well, so the first thing I would say around this is, if you actually think it's a risk to quit your job and go do what you want to do, then you need to just think about that for a minute. Because what the risk is for me is of like living in mediocrity and not ever achieving my potential. That to me would be like the biggest disaster ever. So I actually don't think of it as risk when I think about what do I want to achieve. I step back and go, like, I tie it much more into my impact and my being and my purpose for why I'm here. And so I completely understand, like, if that's actually an issue for you, then you need to really pay attention to that. It doesn't mean just chuck it. If you have a job and you think you need $100,000 a year, or you've built your life around that, then yeah, you can't go and create a business until you've, you know, got a revenue model that's going to support that. I, on the other hand, am like, I know I could live in a closet. I have lived in a closet before when I was in Prague. So that doesn't matter to me. You know, the material things that are out there don't matter as much to me as they used to. I think part of the thing for me was I had to actually achieve a certain level of success and then kind of go, whatever. I don't, you know, I'm not really holding on to all this stuff. A lot of people that I know hold on to their stuff like crazy because they, you know, I've achieved this and I've made it. But at any given moment, I'd risk it all for the next thing that would, you know, get me to the next level. But I don't really think about it so much as that risk. And I, you know, like entrepreneurship is the big buzzword of the day. Everybody wants to be an entrepreneur, but what does that really mean? I think people want to feel like they have autonomy, and they're working on purpose and they're increasing their mastery around whatever that is in the world. Like, that's the real motivation stuff. And whether or not you're doing that in a startup or you find a way to do that within a company or within a government department, wherever that is, I think looking at your impact is a critical component of it. So I'd really kind of step back and go, like, what's the risk? Like, why do you need to have what you think you need to have? And is that really true? Or is it really about, you know, the group of people that you're in? And if you're not making so much money, then your friends you're not going to be able to connect with your friends. Like, what are all those assumptions under there? Again, another sort of unpacking exercise.
Mm-hmm. So there's no like weighing of pros and cons or getting into that sort of nitty gritty, which I, you know, personally with risk is very difficult for me.
Yeah.
And it's just a hamster wheel. So you're bringing it more into the mindset and just getting really clear about what your goals are and what you really want from a heart level.
Yeah. I mean, so there are these five questions that I go through in the book, which I love, that are, you know, what do you want? What do you already have? What do you need? How are you going to get there? And then what are you going to do with it? So it's kind of like, you know, looking at what you want, like looking at what you already have in place, what you need from your network. But again, the last question of like, you know, what are you going to do with it mm-hmm. Is that really what you want? It ties you back up to the beginning thing. Cause I think that's a bit of an exercise you have to go through and cycle on a few times mm-hmm. And get clear. Cause my personal experience has been that dreaming is a muscle. And the first time you start to dream for yourself, it's kind of like, oh, it'd be cool if I could do, you know, like for me, it was, oh, it'd be cool if I could, you know, open an English language school. And I'm like, oh, that worked. That's pretty cool. What else could I do? And then I tried something a little bigger and something a little bigger. And each time it's bigger and bigger. And now I'm in this kind of loop of stretching myself. I just don't think you start with the gigantic, massive stretch. That tends to be hard for people. Mm-hmm. But if you start with something that's a little outside your comfort zone and then you build on it, I think that's a better way, you know, sort of like micro steps. Mm-hmm.
Share with us the big vision that you have. I always, when I think of stretching myself, I'm like, okay, Vicky, you know, talk about big vision. You're somebody who has enormous vision, and I would love for you to share, you know, where are you stretching towards and what do you see for the future for women entrepreneurs out there?
Sure. So the thing for me is when I step back to start SHEEO, I mean, I have done 4 or 5 startups. I could keep doing more, but I sort of stepped back and went, what's the biggest impact I want to have in the world? And 15 years ago, I launched this thing called the SHEEO Business Plan Competition. It was a $250,000 prize for the best business plan by someone under 30 in the IT space. And 15 years later, the numbers are still super low. Only 1 in 9 women actually apply for venture financing. They're not a ton of bold ideas on the street. And I, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot, like how do you change the culture around supporting female entrepreneurs? And so for me, it's a generational long thing. It's like, you know, one day it was cool to smoke and 20 years later, it's not. There was a process that happened in the middle there for system change. Right now, there's this whole vibe around, you know, women entrepreneurs aren't bold enough, aren't confident enough, blah, blah, blah. What would a world look like where that wasn't true? And where they were, you know, women were flying to the moon. And so for me, I'm taking a 20-year lens on this, and that the 3 key areas I think that are required are stories, so media around women who are succeeding on their own terms, and very much broadening the definition of success from only gigantic IPOing to tons of different things, like a person who's running a business that has $5 million in revenue for 25 years in a row, who hires all the people she wants to, works on her own terms, can raise a family. Like, why isn't that considered success? But we never put that on the cover of a magazine. Mm-hmm. So getting the stories out there of awesome women doing things on their own terms. The second part is really education. I feel like we teach business and technology. Everything's backwards. We lead first with skills. Like you have to learn a whole new language before you can actually participate here versus what's the impact you want to have and then layering in the skills. So I think actually our whole education system's upside down around this. And I also think it's very formal and lacking humanity. So I'd love to see business feel like the most fun, open, energizing way to reach your impact in the world, mm-hmm. as opposed to like this really cold, you have to be big, you have to work all the time, you treat people badly because it's just business, quote unquote. But I'd love to see that shift. And then the final piece is financing. And I think right now we have a huge bias towards, you know, go big or go home. Mm-hmm. We, for some reason, deploy all of our capital into a model where we have an expectation that 1 out of 10 will be successful. Mm-hmm. I don't think women would ever have created a model like this. We would have, you know, we'd be raising all boats at the same time and helping one another. So our goal is to build a community of 1 million women at $1,000 each. Every year, $1 billion of capital going into the hands of female entrepreneurs who are building new models, new mindsets, and new solutions for better worlds. That number may go well beyond 1 million, but we're starting with that. We're building new programs to really redefine what business could be and what it looks like. And then we're doing partnerships with people around the media space to get more stories out there. So for me, it's like media, education, and finance are the sort of 3 acupuncture points to shift the system. And those are the areas that we're going to focus on.
So great. So exciting. So happy to be a part of it. You know, just always feel so energized whenever I talk to you. So thank you for having these lofty goals. And thanks for being on Grace and Fire. And I look forward to seeing you at Emerging Women in San Francisco in October.
I'll be there with bells on. Thank you. Cool. Thanks for all the work that you do.
Thank you. Bye, Vicky.
Bye.
Thank you.